Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law.
See terms and conditions. 18+. The views and opinions expressed by guests on this program are not necessarily the views of Thinking Bigger Business Media, Inc. or its employees. Welcome to Smart Companies Thinking Bigger Radio. Get the inside scoop on how America's most successful business owners transformed their entrepreneurial vision into reality. And listen in as some of the top business minds in the country serve up practical advice, tips, and insights for growing your business. Now, here's your host, Kelly Scanlon.
Good morning. Welcome to Smart Companies Radio. I'm Kelly Scanlon, publisher of Thinking Bigger Business Media. And our guest today is Ken Siegel. He is the author of the best-selling new book, Insanely Simple, The Obsession That Drives Apple's Success. Siegel is perfect to write this book because he worked closely with Steve Jobs for more than 12 years, served as his ad agency creative director for both the Next and Apple. Siegel and his team were responsible for Apple's legendary Think Different campaign, which, as many of you know, was an integral part of Apple's transformation following Steve Jobs' return. He also led agency creative efforts for Dell, Intel, and IBM, and he's interacted with the executive teams of all of those companies. His latest effort was the Ellen DeGeneres campaign for JCPenney that debuted on the Oscars. Welcome to the show today.
Well, hello, Kelly. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Let's just plunge right into your book. In that book, Insanely Simple, you note that Steve Jobs didn't just build simplicity into his products. He built it into the company itself. And you say that, and it's pretty well known, I guess, too, that that was an obsession that guided Apple from the brink of bankruptcy back in the late 90s to the powerhouse that it's become today. And in your book, what you lay out is a plan for saying, you know, Apple didn't just have the market on that simplicity, but any of our listeners today, anybody who owns a company, any corporation, can actually harness the power of simplicity to do remarkable things. So talk to us a little bit about that. I know you've written a whole book about it, but yeah, if you could give us a high-level overview of what do you mean, how can you use simplicity to grow a company?
You know, after I worked with Apple and before, I worked with these other companies, Dell, Intel, IBM, as you mentioned. And it was interesting to me because I would say about 80 to 90% of the meetings I was ever in any of those companies, people would bring up Apple as an example of what they wanted to be like when it came to marketing or, you know, some thing that they thought Apple did particularly well. It's interesting that few companies seem to be able to do it, even though it's written pretty clearly how Apple does what it does. So that's really what my book is about. It's why it's this thing about using simplicity to prosper and figuring out how to do it, because it seems to elude a lot of people. And the rules are actually pretty simple, if I could use that word again.
I think we're going to find ourselves talking about that word a lot today. As a matter of fact, you have 10 what I guess you call thinks that help to lead a company owner or managers, whatever level you're operating at within the company, to being more simple in your approach to to actually execute on simplicity. And if you could you go through some of the, I know we can't go through all 10 here today, but could you go through some of the big ones for us, please?
Sure. Well, I start with the basics, which I call Think Brutal, which is named in honor of Steve, because Steve Jobs was pretty brutal when he wanted to be honest with people. And that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's just about being honest. And it's a pretty basic building block, yet it's surprising to me how few companies are as, people within them are as honest with each other as Steve Jobs was with the people he wanted to lead. So that's a basic one. But
you think the trouble with that is, that people have with that is that it's not that they don't want to be honest, it's that they don't want to be they don't want the repercussions because they want to be too nice, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a problem, and I do discuss that in the book, that I think you and I tend to be very nice. I think it's probably true of most people. You don't like to hurt people's feelings or whatever.
Right.
But I do think also that it's not necessary to be, I use the word brutal, but I don't think you need to be mean. I think people appreciate honesty. And sometimes you do have to be honest in a way that might make some people uncomfortable. But the alternative is really to get yourself into a more complicated situation later. And simplicity is the thing that helps you move forward.
Exactly. Well, so what are some of the other ones that you talk about in your book?
Well, thinking small is a really important one. As I observed, one of Steve's most powerful weapons was the small group of smart people. He would not throw extra bodies at a job just because something seemed critical. It was really all about putting the most talented people in a group and enabling them and allowing them to be fulfilled, feel responsible, and doing so actually encouraged them to work ridiculous hours and spend weeks away from their families. But they really felt like they got something out of it, whereas in some of these bigger companies, you'll be one of 50 people working on something, and nobody feels responsible for it, and it just becomes more frustrating, morale goes down, that kind of thing.
There's one anecdote that you offered that I read a little bit about, and it was about Lori. It actually combines the Think Brutal piece that you just talked about. Somebody named Lori had shown up at a meeting, and you want to tell us about that particular episode?
It was funny because it just makes you stop and take note when things happen a little out of the ordinary. In this particular case, we had a meeting, or one of our regular meetings planned, which was a small group of Apple people and a small group of agency people. So total people, say around 10 around this long boardroom table at Apple. And there was a woman in our midst who I didn't know, and I thought other people knew her, but she was someone who was summoned to the meeting for some reason. So just as the meeting began, Steve was just beginning to fill us in on whatever details he wanted to fill us in on to start the meeting. And he was really about two sentences into it when he just stopped in the middle of a sentence and pointed at someone and said, "Who are you?" Like that. And she explained, like, "Well, I'm Lori, and I come from marketing. They wanted me to be here for whatever." And he just said, "We don't need you in this meeting. Thank you, Lori." And the poor woman had to get up and walk out in front of everybody, and it was just
so cold.
I felt bad for her, as did everybody in the room. But as you said, Steve was being honest that he had things he wanted to cover in the meeting. He didn't really think she was going to add anything to it, and it was an extra person in the room.
They have like
that was him enforcing this small group of smart people standard that he did.
So sometimes it pays to be focused like that and just have the people who are going to add the most to it and not be distracted by all of the by other people whose opinions may be relevant in other areas but not in this particular one. So,
yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And as I said, you had 10. You've talked about two of them. Think brutal, think small. Are there any others that you'd like to share with our listeners this morning?
One I think is really important, which is think minimal. And this has to do with, there are actually two levels of this one, but one is really a product issue, and that is if you look around at Apple's competitors, in the laptop area in particular, they offer, like Dell has 19 distinct models of laptops, HP has 49, I mean, it's like ridiculous, and Apple has 5. And I'm counting in there with the different screen sizes as well. That's why Apple really only has 2 models, but they have different screen sizes. It amounts to 5. But people go into these places. You go into an Apple store. You don't necessarily feel like you have less choice. It's just a very clear choice, and people make their purchase quickly. Whereas with other companies, in the name of giving them choice, they're putting them in a position where they have to spend a lot of time thinking about it. And then even then, it's sort of like buyer's remorse oftentimes when you buy a car or something. Did I buy the right thing? There are so many choices you don't know. They have overlapping features, and a lot of them look similar or whatever, but Apple doesn't do that. Apple makes a few things, and they make them really, really well. And it's interesting to note that Apple's philosophy makes them a huge amount of profit. Apple's profit is alone is more than all the other PC companies combined. So it's certainly working. Those who say that Apple doesn't give its customers enough choice really aren't appreciating the business model.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you say that, but because before you pointed that out, I was going to say that with Apple, they make the products and they charge a premium price for them, but they're obviously perceived as value because people are buying them, you know, by the boatloads, seriously. And with some of these other products that you were talking about, as you said, there's overlapping features, and it might be a $60 difference. But if you come over here, well, you still have those two features, but you get this other one, but you don't have that one. Although you've got the three that overlapped, and yet it's, you know, $40 less. And so you try to do the, you know, to use another analogy, you know, the per ounce kind of the per unit cost, and you just becomes very difficult to do. So you give them a good quality product with high perceived value at a price point that people are willing to pay, and as you said, lots of profit as a result of that.
Yeah.
So let me stop. If you know, we can come back to some of these things if you'd like in just a minute. But as you're talking about this, it strikes me that what lies at the heart of all the ones that you've mentioned actually is a really acute focus, whatever it is, whether, you know, it's on the minimal, it's a real acute focus on which products, which people are going to be in the room, which things am I going to choose to make important and therefore be brutally honest about. So it sounds like it's getting that clarity and being focused that's probably going to run through all 10 of these items that you outline in your book.
I think that is true. Again, the things I discuss in the book really are, they all come from Steve Jobs, or the values he instilled in the company. And I think Steve was all about focus, and that was the amazing thing about working with Apple as opposed to working with a lot of other companies. There seemed to be a lot of confusion around in a lot of these big companies, and Steve was very good at keeping people, keeping their eyes on the goal and working very hard to achieve the goals. But you never had any doubt where you stood working in that world, whereas in the these other more complicated companies, there are just a lot of things to sort through every day, and you don't often know who it is you're trying to please. It could be like a succession of meetings where you have to go through two or three approvers, whereas at Apple, the final decision maker was in the room from the start, from the first briefing. And even if it wasn't Steve, by the way, you could work projects for vice presidents within Apple, and they would be at the briefing, and then they'd meet you once every week or so to see how you were doing. So you never got to that end meeting where someone would say, "Why'd you do that?" Because they knew what you were working on. And these bigger companies, you can get to that last meeting 2 months down the road and find out that you've been spinning your wheels because someone didn't communicate exactly right.
Right. Well, one of the questions that I have, these are all wonderful tenets to hang your hat on as an owner or as a manager, an executive within a company. But you spoke about it a minute ago. You referenced, as a company gets bigger, they get more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
How can you, as for our listeners today, what kind of measures can you put in place? Maybe you start out with the best of intentions and you want to cut to the chase in all these areas and you want to practice simplicity. But as the company grows and it gets more complicated, how do you stay true to that as the company gets bigger?
Well, that's the billion-dollar question for Apple, I guess. I think it's a question of retaining the small company values. And Steve Jobs has gotten up in the past and said that he proclaimed that Apple was the world's largest startup. He never wanted to let it get so complicated as it got bigger, and he kept those things in focus. And I think what happens in most companies is that when you have one success, you institutionalize it because you want to keep repeating that success. And over time, it repeats and repeats. And then a couple of generations later, as employees come and go, the process has just become so all-important that people focus on more on the process than the idea that's flowing through it. Mm-hmm. And this happened a lot when I worked with these bigger companies where at Apple, you could have a new idea along the way, and Steve Jobs would be very happy to hear it, even though it might change the timing, the schedule, or the cost, or whatever. But in these other companies, if you dared to step outside the process, you would get slapped for it, and you're an obstacle.
Right.
They were really. It was interesting that they were really concentrating more on executing the process as planned, as opposed to coming up with a better idea along the way if someone might have one.
Right. So, he was open to innovation on the fly as opposed to planned innovation.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he was all about ideas. It sounds almost trite to say it because so many of the places I've worked in say that. But Steve really was, and he really wanted to protect great ideas and not have committees judge them, that kind of thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, in these other companies, you could go through 3, 4, 5 people before it finally gets approved.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, sometimes they haven't been in at the beginning, and so you get all the way through these things, these various layers that where it has been approved,
right.
And you get to the final one, and the rug gets pulled out from under you. Let me ask this. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, one other interesting fact. I've never seen this in any other company, and you could say this is unique to Steve Jobs, but I think any leader might want to think about this, and that is that in other agency client situations, we've always had to present to like a VP of marketing first before we'd get to the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm really not talking necessarily about the titles, but the final decision maker.
Yes.
There would be somebody who sort of protects that person and looks at the ideas first and says, well, he doesn't like this kind of thing, so I wouldn't show him that. Well, Steve, when he got wind of that, one or two times kind of snapped and said, I don't want anyone filtering work before I see it. He said it right to his VP of marketing.
Wow.
He said, there might be something in there you think I don't want to see, but there might be some spark in there that will mean something to me, and I don't want anyone filtering out work before I see it. So he wanted those people present in the meeting to express their opinion, but he didn't want them sorting through all the work before he saw it. And I thought that was a pretty amazing thing.
That is, and as you said, it may very well be unique to him because it's just something you don't see a lot of. In fact, most people encourage just the opposite, like you said, that don't bring that to me. You know what my expectations are.
Right.
Only bring certain things to me.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. Most of us who are already in business don't have the luxury of starting our businesses over from scratch and saying, okay, we're going to start with this premise of simplicity. We're already immersed in our businesses. They're chugging along, and there's already processes in place. In fact, you could probably say most of them are probably already complicated. So anyone listening to this who thinks, you know what, he's absolutely right, but how do I dig myself out now? What advice would you give to them?
Well, I think that, as you note, if you're a startup or a small company, you can start out with these values. And what Steve talked about remaining a startup, holding on to the values of a startup, even as they get to be a huge global company, he was simply hanging on to a value that he had from the start. So it was easier, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When you then talk about bigger companies that have already gotten complicated, what can they do? I think what makes sense is kind of attacking it by department. You, as a person who wants to start introducing these principles of simplicity, you're obviously part of some group within the company, and you can hopefully turn that into a model where you can show everyone around you how much better it can be. But what you really need is the top guy to buy into it, because I think what I always wished, to be honest, when I worked with Dell, was that Michael Dell might one day just bang the gavel on the table and say, this is the way it's going to be.
Uh-huh.
And it never quite happened that way because
there
are all these different divisions that wanted to do it their own way. But I think it's great if a CEO or president or someone with power can say, we are going to take a fresh look at all of these things and go about it differently. But I think from within, if you're just a manager or a worker, that you want to try to shine the light of simplicity as best you can, but it is absolutely more difficult than when you're starting off with a startup.
Sure. But as you said, it starts at the top, and that's what, if you're already in a position where your processes rule, then it's up to the person who's in charge to say, we're going to stop that. So
right.
We've got some limited time left here, but I want to get in a couple of more things.
Okay.
You're very well known for naming products. In fact, you were the person who came up with the I for the iMac, the iPad. Tell me how that came about. How did you come up with it, and you know, did it take a lot to convince Steve Jobs to accept that?
Well, it's a funny story because Steve, I think he treated marketing issues no differently than he did product issues. And I think there are plenty of stories about people bringing designs to him or model products or whatever, and he rejects them the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we brought him the name iMac, and he rejected that twice. And he did it the first time saying, "I hate it." The second time, he said, "Well, I don't hate it this week, but I still don't like it." And then it sort of took care of itself from there. The next day, I found out that he was running around showing some people. He had the name put on a model of the machine, and he was getting opinions about it, which he didn't tell us he was going to do. So that was good news. And then suddenly it was just called iMac. But the funny part of the story is that he had a name in his head that he was really enamored with, and that was MacMan. And it took us 2 weeks of those presentations to get him past MacMan. He really thought that was a cool thing. And, you know, it's easy. I don't mean to make Steve sound goofy because he was one of the world's great geniuses, and I have just incredible respect and love and admiration for everything he stood for. But, you know, all of us get a little thing in our head that sounds cool, and it could well be that had Steve gotten his way and it became MacMan, maybe it would be just an everyday word and we wouldn't mind it now. Like, remember, iPad was horrible when we first heard it, and now it's just a name. Who knows? We might have gotten used to MacMan, but certainly the thought of it is rather repulsive.
Well, I mean, the first thing that came to my into my head was Pac-Man. And
yes.
Pac-Man.
Well, that's very funny because one of the things he said when he said, "Can you beat this name?" He said, "There are two things you need to worry about." And one of them was that because it looked sort of frivolous, that original iMac looked really cartoonish.
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I don't want to throw people off in the wrong direction and have them think it's like a toy." So we even said to him, like, "Well, Mac-Man sounds like Pac-Man."
Yeah,
I said exactly that. And he sort of shrugged it off, like, "Eh, it doesn't bother me that much, you know."
Yeah.
So, you know, when you like something, you like it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get talked out of it.
Yeah. Well, obviously the I stuck, and now we have a whole line of products, again, going with the simplicity, you know, they're preceded by the iMac, the iPad, the iPhone, the iPod, all of them. Let's talk just for a minute about the Think Different campaign. A lot of people credit you and your team with coming up with a campaign, Think Different, that actually saved Apple. That's back when you know, Jobs had come back and the company was on the brink of bankruptcy. What was behind that campaign, and why was it so impactful? Why that campaign, and how come it? What about it caused the company's turnaround?
Well, for starters, I like to be a little bit more modest about the effect of advertising than most advertising people are. I think it was a great campaign. It did Apple enormous good, but I also think what Steve did with Apple obviously was vastly more important. Great advertising can add energy to something that's there, but you have to have something there. So, but what was behind it was you're correct that Apple was very near bankruptcy, and there weren't going to be any new products for 6 to 8 months because Steve had just basically walked in the door, and he had met with the engineers and said, "We got to do something really great," but they hadn't even started yet. So it was going to be a while. So the question was, what would we do in the meantime? And the decision was that we need to tell the world why Apple, that the spirit of Apple is still alive and well, and great things are going to happen. And Steve wanted to invest in this brand campaign to do that, which, again, most companies on the brink of failure would be circling the wagons and cutting costs. And Steve said, "I want to spend and make this point to the world that Apple really stands for something important." So really it was addressed to three audiences. One would be the people who used to know a very successful Apple like 12 years before but had sort of forgotten the success. And then over that long period of time, a lot of new people came along in the market who never knew of a successful Apple. And then there were the people who worked at Apple who needed to be inspired and energized. So the words Think Different were actually written by an art director, which infuriated all the writers in the room. But it was one of his great contributions. And I love those words so much because you could have literally hung a sign with those words in the garage when they built their very first computer, and it would have been appropriate. Apple has always been about thinking different. And
absolutely.
So it was just a great authentic expression, whereas, again, other companies set out to do a brand campaign, and the first order of business usually
right.
is like, well, what do we want to be? So Apple knew what it wanted to be, and we just needed to express it. And it really did set the stage. The really great thing about it was we kept saying, think different for 6 months. And when iMac came along, it looked different. All you had to do
yes.
was take a picture of it and put Think Different under it, and it was just absolutely a perfect payoff to the campaign we had been running for 6 months.
Right, lived up to the billing. Ironically, maybe serendipitously, but I got my copy of Fortune magazine over the weekend, the June 11th issue, and right there, front cover, is Tim Cook, and headline is How Tim Cook is Changing Apple and the New CEO's Daunting Task of Replacing a Legend. What do you think Tim Cook is going to do to change Apple? How is he changing it? Do you think he's going to stay true to the principles of simplicity that Steve Jobs used to make it so great?
Yeah, I do. I think that Steve really instilled his values into the company, and Tim worked with him for a very long time and knew how he worked and what made Apple successful. The whole executive team really has embraced those values, so I'm not worried about that. But it's also true that things happen that are unpredictable and that Steve would mm-hmm. never have had to deal with. And so how they react to those things will be, by definition, different, because who knows what Steve would have done. And I thought it was interesting that Tim went off to China and visited the Foxconn factory where they were having issues.
Yes,
and
he did.
I wondered to myself at that point, like, would Steve really have done that? Steve said, we want workers to be treated fairly, and we have all these rules and all that, but he didn't fly over there and have those meetings, and he didn't mm-hmm. hire an independent company to assess the situation and make recommendations, that kind of thing. So who knows? I think Tim may well do certain things differently, like paying the dividend is another good example. Steve said they would never
yes.
do that, or
right.
in his time they didn't do it. So I think things will change little by little, and they sort of have to, because there was only one Steve Jobs. But I do think that the values are really burnt into the company, and that the important things will remain, they'll remain true to those values. So I'm confident.
Well,
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.